Ivy Cordova, how the hell are you? It's finally happening. It's here. It happened.
Have we not been talking about this since the beginning? Just like since we were on Zoom, and I remember like those early Zoom podcasts. I'm pretty sure I had my work laptop balanced on like a dresser, and I would just be sitting like when we had that one with you, me, Nicole, and Rhoda talking about like 90s music. Mm-hmm. I was sitting like just cross-legged on my bed, and it was like the most like. It was the most unprofessional setup, and like now we're here, and you have this dope ass office decorated with like this. This is like the kind of, I don't know if this is like a man cave or some sort of like haven for creativity. Like I would feel disrespectful pulling out my dick here. You know what I mean? I just feel like this is such a huge, like I want a room like this in my house one day. Like I'm really fascinated with this.
It's the latter. You said man cave or you said den of creativity.
Yeah. Den of creativity. Yeah.
It's the den of creativity. Yeah. We spend a lot of time in here. The living room is dope, but we end up hanging out in here a lot more, but I could tell,
dude, like this is so comfortable.
Yeah. I wanted, this is where I work. Like my day job is right there. And then when the week is over, I wheel out the office chair to give more room in here.
Yeah.
I brought this chair in. This chair I found on the side of the road in Folsom. They were giving it away.
The fuck?
That's the kind of shit they give away in Folsom.
Like, I wonder if this was like from the office of like the warden or something, you know. It just looks very official.
It's very nice.
It's I like it.
Some hardcore decisions were made in that chair.
Probably.
Yeah. So we did. Okay. Let me give my, I love giving my backstory of the guests.
Of course.
Okay. First time I ever saw you, Invisible Disabilities, Sacramento Punchline.
Oh yeah.
I don't remember if you were headlining or not.
No.
But, that was the first time I saw you. Came up, introduced myself after the show.
Was I nice?
You were super nice.
Okay.
Well, you kind of did the, yeah, nice to meet you. You know, like gave me an autograph and walked away. You were polite. And then I was an Ivy Cordova fanboy for like the first 18 months, right? But then I got to sit in on a podcast with Danny D's old podcast.
Oh, shit. That's right. That's right.
The gag on this podcast. They messaged me.
Nick, Danny, right? Are they still doing it?
No, they're not doing it. I didn't think so. They unceremoniously retired.
Damn.
But Nick and I had like this love-hate relationship. We're like, we were friends, but we gave each other shit.
Yeah.
You know? And I would nudge him about like, what the fuck's up with your podcast? Like, it's kind of crazy. It's all over the place. And he'd be like, but I'm like, you know, I'm like, no, I ain't dissing your production. Your production is on point, but we'd give each other shit. And he messaged me one day. He's like, hey, can you co-host? Do you want a guest co-host? And I was like, who's the guest? And he's all, Ivy Cordova. Oh, fuck yeah.
Oh, that one was a fun one. I remember that one.
Yeah. And so then after that, we chatted, and then I felt like after that I was no longer Ivy Cordova fanboy. I thought we were peers.
We are.
After that I was like, yeah. Okay, we're on the same level. I can still geek out.
Yeah.
They're rad, but we're pals now. Then you did an episode of my podcast, like a regular episode, I think. You did a regular episode where we really just like geeked out about Trader Joe's.
I still think about that a lot because like I go to Trader Joe's like probably, I think lately it's been twice a week because like my son, like I have a teenage son, and like I feel like Trader Joe's is like the most economical way to feed him, and you know, without having to resort to child labor. I'm like, Jacob, like I can't, like you got to go find a work at a boba shop or something. Like I can't, like, but Costco at the same time is too much for just me and him. So Trader Joe's, like Trader Joe's comes up with new shit every time I'm there.
Oh my god,
it's so overwhelming. Like if I still drank, I'd be like, yo, like we gotta line up these wines and do a blind test. Like just there's so many options.
I was in there the other day and I noticed that it was like there was nobody around. I forgot something and they rang the bell for somebody to go get it for us.
Yeah.
And then we stood there awkwardly for like 2 minutes, like nobody showed up. And I was like, it's kind of weird. And she's like, there's a wine tasting going on in the back room. And I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'll get it tomorrow.
When me and so a couple weeks ago, me and Mean Dave, we went to, you know, Mean Dave, right?
Yep.
So we drove down to where was it, Clovis, to go do a show. And so it was like a 3-hour drive each way. Like, it was a good time. It was a good time for us to do that too, because we had been long overdue, both for a road trip and also just to catch up, because a lot of stuff had been going on in my life at that point. And we were so early that we stopped at Grocery Outlet, which is, for something that's so far away from the Bay Area, it was really stocked with a lot of things that people like in the Bay Area, like gluten-free shit and bone broth and all sorts of things. And then I found a Trader Joe's that was like right down the street from the venue, because at that point, that was like the same week that like my cat passed away. And so, you know, like when you have something tragic like that, you kind of just want comfort. And so for me, I just wanted comfort food. When I tell you, I went to that Trader Joe's and I had like a cooler in the back of my truck, or not my truck, my SUV. I stocked that so full of, I'm pretty sure I got almost every last one of the chicken verde enchiladas.
Yes.
Like I had like 4 of them just stacked in that like cooler, and then Greek yogurt and a bunch of stuff. And I was just like, you know what?
Their Greek yogurt is bomb.
Their Greek yogurt is super bomb. And I like having the single serving one, because it's sort of like the Faye yogurt, and the single serving one. I like that because one of those per one container of chicken enchiladas. Yes, I've had time to think about this. That's like the perfect serving of what should be sour cream, but like, I can trick my mind. It's Greek. There's no denying that it's Greek yogurt, but it has that whole kind of creamy, like mouthfeel function. That's the kind of comfort I was looking for. And like, that's my go-to at Trader Joe's, like that. I used to really also like the buffalo dip, because that's what got me through like my 2 breakups ago. I did not have the capacity to eat anything, but I had to eat something. I know, right? So I had a lot of those mini peppers and buffalo chicken dip. But what nobody told me was that you're supposed to heat it up, and that was the game changer. I was like,
oh really,
bitch? I've been eating this shit cold for like months. I was like, no wonder I was depressed. Like, just
I'm all over anything, everything but the bagel. I love the crackers.
Do you have the seasoning?
I have the seasoning.
I have that shit in my house at all times.
I use that more than I think I use salt and pepper. I use it on everything.
Yeah, Trader Joe's is our shit.
Yeah, I was almost done with the Ivy Cordova backstory.
Sorry,
no, that's okay. We segued, and then we got together, and I put together this all star lineup of you, Rhoda Ramon, Nicole Eichenberg, and we did the still talked about top 5 R&B albums of the 90s.
I love that. That was one of my favorite. That was one of my favorite podcasts. I did a lot of fucking podcasts during, I mean, we all did. During
yeah, that's but, all we had.
But that was one of my favorite ones. That was one of my favorite ones.
It was
ones.
So much fun. And we all just, I think like you guys were just so excited about, you're like, what? Other people nerd out about this? Like, yeah. You know, and we got together, and that's the backstory. But yeah. Now, okay, oh, there's so many things I want to talk about with you. Same group plus Tina San Lucas.
Yeah.
We're going to go see the Fugees and Lauryn Hill.
That's going to be great. Like, I didn't even look at where the seats were. I don't really care. I feel like we're just rolling there. And if she's late, she's late. We're just going to hang out and we're going to smoke and we're going to have a real good time.
Yeah. I've had a couple of haters be like, well, if she shows up, and I'm like, shut the fuck up. Why'd I even tell you?
Right.
You know,
right.
I'm like, dude, we're going.
Either way, we know the words to her fucking songs.
Yeah. We'll just have a sing along.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I've been rapping. I've been rapping like Lost Ones in the car. Just
oh,
like
man.
that's a good angry breakup song. Like it's
you might win some, but you just so excited. The only thing I'm a little bit bummed out about that show is that so Rhoda, Nicole, and Tina and I are obviously gonna ride up there together mm-hmm. from Sacramento, but yeah. Then we're gonna meet you there. So like I wish that you were part of the road trip as well. You know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're going to have a blast there.
You're going to get plenty of, like, FaceTime. I'm still deciding if I should buy those LA Gears that I threw in the chat. Like, because what I really want is the LA Gears that have, like, the 3 colored laces. Do you remember that shit?
I do remember
like,
that.
I just saw, like, that and maybe, like hypercolor. Like, I just, like, I'm just trying to think of what period of my life would I have listened to this music. Because I know I definitely went from being a 90s kid to, like, super emo to like where I plucked my eyebrows out just like every other person in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then I became a raver kid.
Oh, you were a raver kid.
I was a raver kid, like home base, dude. Like I 1997 to so I started sneaking into raves when I was young. And then when they started having massives, like when I turned 18, that's when, you know, I started going like with my college friends and stuff like that. So the last rave I went to was probably, was it 2003? Like I just, yeah, maybe 2003, 2002. Like I just, but I partied everywhere. Like I, cause I worked at nightclubs. And so because you work in night, like when you work in nightclubs, for me personally, just seeing all the shit that happens in nightclubs, like it turned me off to like the club scene. I was just like, look, I just work here. I don't actually party with these people. I would always leave my job at the club, like once the box office shut down, and go catch like either like a late night rave. It was, you know, back when, you know, you had to actually go to locations to find the next location, or these were in like, before they were in warehouses, they were like in little abandoned like business parks.
Okay.
Like that's when they had raves in like super random places. Or one of the things that we would do, like there was a place called The End Up in San Francisco. Have you heard of it?
No.
So it's on like, I want to say 6th and Harrison. I don't know if it's still operating, if it's still around, but like that was the go-to for like all the after hours shit. So like after all the clubs closed down, people would be at The End Up like dancing and doing shit until like 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I just, that's how much my life in my teens and like early 20s revolved around like partying. And I'm so boring now, but like I like having those stories. And I just like the fact that I did just enough drugs to know that I had a good time, but to be able to remember what I did 20 years later, you know?
See, I did a little bit too much drugs, and some of the memories are very blurry.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think, but similar, right? My early 20s and 30s were just all about partying.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm like, hey, you want a cup of coffee?
The coffee usually is the best and most exciting part of my day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I like, you know, when you're younger, when you're in your 20s, you have all sorts of exciting things that are happening, but also a lot of uncertainty, right? So when you get to the point where, like, I'm 42. How old are you?
52.
Okay. So like, you know, like we're similar demographic, right? Where,
yeah.
You know, it's like, it's nice that we have those memories, but at the same time, we're also, well, I personally, like, we're cognizant, I think, of the fact that we're getting up there in age. And, you know, as much as I enjoy those things, I listen to music, I reminisce on the memories, I don't think I could ever actually go to another one now. You know,
no,
like, I feel like I could not revisit that. Nobody, that's like being a person, being a mom at a rave is like being the old person at the club. Like, is it illegal? No, but would your kids be happy to hear about it? Also, no.
I'm also at the age where, like, I don't think I could do a festival anymore either.
No.
Like,
no.
I could do, like a concert, like a starts at 7:30, 8, is over at 11. I have to pay for good parking because I don't want to walk a fucking mile. You know, like, yeah. I'm just like, I think we're going to get into some stuff that I really want to talk to you about. I was like, we're learning how to take better care of ourselves.
Yeah.
And
we're so much more proactive about that than we, than like the people that are our age now were back then. Like they were horrible examples. They were horrible role models. Just absolutely terrible.
Yeah,
like just,
right?
Yeah. I'm just like, I was like, what do you mean moms grow up to complain about their husbands and drink wine? Like, I don't want this. Like, why would I, like, with somebody, like, this is somebody that I'm supposed to spend my life with, and I'm here, like, getting loaded on not even the best wine and complaining about them? Like, I just remember, like, I stopped getting invited to shit like that because, like, this is, like, maybe 5 years after college graduation, like, some of my friends are married, whatever, you know, and they would just get together, and I wasn't married just yet. I got married super briefly, like, in my early 30s, and then that was like literally over and done with within a few years. And so, but my friends were like super, you know, they were the kinds of people that operated on timelines. They're just like, okay, you graduate this year and then you date for another 2 years. You get engaged after 2 years. They wanted the house and all that shit by 24.
By a certain age,
yeah.
Where they were panicking.
Right. And I'm just like, when I think about it now, I'm like, that's incredibly young. Like, I don't even think, like, the fact that a legal adult is 18 years old, I feel like I barely became an adult at 35. Like, I feel like they should raise that thing. And, like, so some of my friends would be, I notice a lot of our interactions would be just getting together and they're just talking shit about, like, my husband's so annoying. And I would say shit like, so leave.
Right.
And that, like, and they're just like, what do you mean?
And
like,
not be married?
Right. It just seemed like they love talking about it and don't actually want a solution.
Well, I think a lot of people, like, are just like how they say that you're stuck in a marriage because, like, once like you've got a kid and a mortgage and a house and a car note and all of that is like the thought of like going out on your own just seems overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad I never ended up in one.
No, same. Like I did not marry my son's father. We had a co-parenting arrangement from pretty much the time he was like a year old. Because like we weren't in a relationship, but we were doing things that lead to like people having children. And so it was an interesting dynamic to try to explain to his parents. And he was like 9 years older than me, but his parents were like more old school. Whereas my parents, they're just like, are you is this your boyfriend? No. Do you love him? No. Do you want to marry him? No. Are you having a baby? Yes. Alrighty then. Like that was literally like my parents' line of questioning. They're just like, well, you're grown, whatever. And it was good for them too, because they're just like, oh, by the way, you're also off our insurance now, because I had just aged out of their insurance. So they're just like, you can figure out this parenthood thing. I was like, what?
It was probably also like, all right, how much do we have to like him?
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like my parents have always been just sort of like hands off, and they're just like, well, the most important thing is that you have a healthy baby. And I'm glad that that's the dynamic that they gave me, because I was just like, I don't, you know, some of my friends like in college, they got married because they had parents like Catholic, strict Catholic Filipino parents that were just like, oh, you're going to get pregnant at 19. Okay. You got to get married. And you know, that just forcing that kind of thing on a child. Like, I'm glad that I
kind of just heavy duty, huh?
Yeah. Like it's a lot. I'm just like, that's a lot to put on somebody. And I'm sort of glad that like most of my life choices, and it's crazy because like most of my life choices, my friends were just like, oh, you're the wild one. Like you're the unpredictable one. You're the wild card, blah, blah, blah. But like 20 something years later, I'm probably the one that's the most stable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I think there's something about like being allowed to make those mistakes, being allowed to have things happen in your life that aren't like super traditional. Like, you know, a lot of people find themselves in the lives that they're in because like they want, you know, they aspire to marriage, they aspire to kids because it's what their parents did. And, you know, without stopping to think like, is this even the kind of life that I want? Because like I have so many friends that like just popped out like kid after kid after kid after kid. Nothing wrong with that. Like if they love children, that's great. But then they're also like years later, they're just like, well, what's my purpose now? Like,
or they're going to end up like empty nesters at like 55 and not realize what it is that they have for themselves now. Yeah. That, you know,
it's okay. Like it's something that I became real comfortable over the years with is like with like my group of like any group of friends that I was with in college, like socially or otherwise, I always felt like I'm always the one that's making different or more controversial decisions. And it's just like sometimes people didn't agree with them. Sometimes it cost me some friendships. But at the end of the day, I'm just like, this is my life. Like I like a lot of these people, like they're not going to matter in like 10 years. Like that's what I kept telling myself, you know, as I kept going. And it's just I've always just been of the school of thought that you do what works for you. And if there's people in your life that you care about, you meet them halfway, you know, like
fair.
It seems like a pretty fair compromise, you know, live your life, try not to hurt anybody. Just that's the way I look at it. That's how I tell what I tell my son too. It's like, I can't tell you like, you know, what path to take in life other than to do something that makes you happy. As long as it, you know, as long as you can make a living, as long as you don't hurt nobody, you know, you're polite you help old people cross the street. Like that's just be a good person. Like things are going to happen the way that they're going to happen. You got to do some work, but you know, things are, you know, if you're a good person with good intentions, I think things work out.
Were you like, one of the things that I noticed about you over the years is that you're very hard worker. Like you kind of push yourself. Were you always that way?
No. Like I it's funny because I actually brought this up in another, I think in an Instagram story, because we were talking about people in undiagnosed ADHD. And so I was always a person like in college, I was always a busy, hardworking person because, like in high school, I was kind of an underachiever, right? Like my sister, who's 2 years younger than me, she was the student council. She was like class president, whatever. I was the person that was smoking weed behind like the choir room. I was the person that was an honor roll student, but also got arrested for stealing a FUBU jersey from Nordstrom. which that was probably the one thing that like my dad was so used to picking me up from like other schools or malls or places where I would get into fights and things like that, because my mom was just like, he traveled a lot for business. And so when he was home, it was like the only thing that he did when he was home was pick me up or take me out of whatever trouble like I was getting into.
Deal with the trouble you got into when he was gone.
Yeah, because my mom was just like, you deal with your daughter. You fucking deal with it. Like, you're never here, right? And so, like, I spent a lot of time with my dad, just, like, very awkward rides home. But, like, the FUBU jersey was the thing that really, like, that was the thing that really was just, like, he was like, that's enough. Because he was so pissed off at me. He was so pissed off at me that he, and you know what? You remember FUBU, right?
Yeah.
He explained to me, While we were walking out the door, what FUBU stood for. He was like, do you even know what FUBU means? It stands for us, by us. But putanganang, not us. He was so angry that he made me apologize to every black person we passed on the way to the car.
Wow.
For disrespecting their car. Like, he was just like, that's so disrespectful. That is so. And I was just like, Dad, like, it's made in Indonesia. Like, they don't care. They don't care. Just
why do you think you were like that? Why did you have this rebellious streak in you? What were you upset about?
Now that I think about it, like I was generally a pretty good kid, but like for the most part, like I just for some reason I had a lot of trouble with like focusing and listening and authority, which I now know was like due to undiagnosed ADHD. But I was always a good student. Like I skipped a grade actually in elementary school. I skipped a grade.
Wow.
Yeah, and then they sent me back 2 weeks later for behavioral problems.
We're wrong.
Right. They're just like, she can add and she can read, but she can't sit still to save her fucking life.
She's just a good test taker.
That's exactly what it was. Like my sister and I, and my sister is like so fucking smart and hardworking. Like I was the underachiever in my family. Cause my little sister, UC Berkeley, Columbia, you know, just all sorts of like one achievement after the other. And so, but she was a horrible, horrible test taker. She was so nervous. And I remember like when we were taking our SATs, we both had very different experiences. She had to take like workshops and additional tutoring. And it took her 3 times to be able to crack like 1,000, right? This is back when you had to get, what, 1,600 on the SATs. And for me, I forgot about my SATs. Like I literally had to get a ride to take my SATs. I think I was like 16. And this was like after I'd been drinking Mad Dog and doing Molly in my homie's garage with a puke bucket next to my face. And I rolled to the test with puke still in my hair and I got a 1300. Like, it's just, that's the kind of shit that my family was like, really?
So was college your decision, or was college kind of a thing that like, okay, my parents want me to go to college. Like, I'm expected to go to college, even though I'm a rebel, I'm going to go to college. Or
yeah,
did
it
you want to go to college?
That was half and half. Like I actually wanted to join the military.
What?
Right. Can you imagine? Like, I just.
What branch?
How far
did that get?
I wanted to be a Marine. And I got so far as inviting a recruiter to the house. And as soon as my dad walked in, he was just like, oh, hell no. Like, you need to go. And I was just like, you said this to a fucking Marine? Like, bitch, we're going to get shot. I mean, I don't know how they roll. But like, that was the end of my military aspirations, because my grandfather fought in World War II. And I have a few relatives on my mom's side of the family that were like educated at West Point. So like, I wouldn't say we're a huge military family, but there was enough of a presence there where I felt like, you know, I want to do something different, because I did not know at that point what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to write. I knew I wanted to do something, but I knew in my mind that I wasn't going to do anything conventional. I wasn't going to teach. But I didn't know what that was. So I was like, you know, maybe I'll just go learn how to shoot and get disciplined while I'm at it. And my dad was like, absolutely not. So so that was the end of my military aspiration. And then I went straight into college, and my sister also went to college. Like, we went to 2 different schools. But the reason I worked so much in college, to circle back to your original question, is because like my sophomore year, my dad sat me and my sister down and he was like, okay, your first 2 years of college, you know, we can pay for, but after that you're on your own, because they were putting my cousins in the Philippines through school as well. And so, which, you know, definitely not nearly as expensive to send them to for them to go to school there than it was for, you know, to pay for two college kids' tuition in the United States, right? So my sister got a bunch of scholarships, and I worked like three jobs. I worked at nightclubs. I worked at Old Navy. I worked at the Exploratorium in San Francisco. You know that museum?
Yep.
Yeah, I worked in the I was in the public information department, which is like basically their PR. And then I also had a 6-month stint where I sold ecstasy. Like, there's, you know, you just you did what you had to do for tuition. And now that I think about it, I'm just like, this is back when tuition was like $500 a quarter. You know, it's just, it's crazy what the kind of pressure that people have now to pay for school. It's so fucking expensive. Like, my student loans now are just like if you put my student loans plus my sister's and my brother-in-law's, because they went to like Ivy League schools, I'm just like, this is why none of us are going to be homeowners ever. Like, just, we've accepted it. But at the same time, I'm just like I went to like for graduate school, and I'm on medical leave from graduate school, but I'm in grad school. And so I'm at USC. And so like, that's not cheap, right? But no. I'm just like, you know what? Like, they don't need my money. Like, they have so many like celebrity, like legacy people. Like, Dr. Dre has a wing named after him. You know what I mean? I was just like, I'll have these student loans until the day I don't give a fuck. Like, somebody else could pay for that. Like, let me go find an Aunt Becky from Full House that'll pose me next to a rowing machine just to get me on it. Like, they did so much dishonest shit to get their kids into that school that I'm like, you know what? They don't really need my money.
That's true.
They don't.
So you went back to graduate school, and this is something I wanted to ask you, because
of course.
I asked this about a lot of people who started comedy.
Yeah.
After the pandemic, did something trigger you during the pandemic that made you be like, okay, it's now or never, I'm gonna, like, did we spend way too much time isolated that we just started getting these thoughts of like, it's now or never, I need to do something? Is that what made you jump back into
school?
Yes.
I was just so fucking bored. I was running out of shit to do. I was quarantined with my entire family. And like, we had gotten to the point where first we were doing things together, and then we got to the point where we were all spending time in separate sections of the house. And I was just super bored. Like, I had watched everything that I could possibly think to watch. I tried, you know, a lot of people were doing like at home beauty treatments and stuff like that. They're like, I'm going to learn how to do eyelashes. I'm going to learn how to pluck my own eyebrows. And I was just like, I'm going to learn how to wax my asshole. And I was just like, you know, if there was an opportunity for me to learn how to do something that undignified, like, let me just see if I could do it myself. And then after, like, I accidentally set the microwave on fire, I was like, I'm gonna have to think of something else to do with my time. And I just, on a whim, I decided to apply to a master's program that was under USC's law school, and I did not think I was gonna get in, and I did. So I was like,
Well, I guess I got to do it now.
Got to do it. And the cool thing is that it's like all online, and some of the work too is like asynchronous. So it's like you have to upload it at a certain time. It's a good way to like keep yourself on track. But and it was great. Like, I probably have another year left. Like, I took medical leave this year for like mental health, and this is like the one year that I was gonna say this is like probably the year that I've been like the least productive professionally. But with regards to my personal life, I've actually spent more time at home with my family than I have in the last 3 years. And which is crazy because I live with them. And the fact that this year was the most time I've ever spent with them, like, I was told by both my academic advisor and my therapist that they're like, Ivy, like, slow down. Like, why are you barreling through this work? Like, you're 42. Nobody cares. And I was like, you know what? That's not wrong.
Yeah,
that's not.
I love that we're segueing this way, because like that, yeah. Like, you know, I've always, you know, I follow you on social media. There's a handful of people that I follow on social media. I follow a lot of people, but there's, in my world, there's these influencers and these motivators, right? And like, you're definitely one of them to me.
Stop. Really?
Yes. Yes. And like, your posts are like, you're vulnerable, and you can be vulnerable. We know when you're angry, we know when you're upset, we know when you're fucking happy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But so yesterday, or the day before yesterday, like, I knew that graduate school was in your universe, and of course, you know, you do stand up and you're super busy with that, you're a mom, but you had the super long post yesterday, and you finished it with this, where you said, I might finish my master's degree next year. I might not.
Yeah.
2024 might be the year that I choose stillness and my passport and making peace with the fact that I don't have to plan everything down to the second anymore and freak out when I have a free day. I might disappear and reemerge with the comedy tour. My son might open for me. You never know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I try telling like these younger comics that like go to like every single open. I'm like, slow the fuck down.
Yeah.
Live a life that's worth talking about on stage, because if not, like what made you realize I got to pump my brakes?
Well, for me, this is like the year that just the way that I started, the way that I actually started that entry or that post, that pretty much says it all. Like this, like 2022 and 2023, that was the year that I crashed and burned, because for years I was just going hard. Like I was doing, I always had a full-time job. And then I was doing shows like, I think at my peak, I was doing shows like maybe like five nights out of the week. And then I enrolled in school, and then like, you know, I have my kid and his stuff. And so I was just going full force because I didn't know any different. Like my dad's been a workaholic his whole life, tried to retire 3 different times. I think because he's retiring next year, allegedly.
It's going to stick.
Yeah. I think this is the one that's actually going to stick, because I remember a few years ago he had like a he used to work in Concord, and he had this what did he have? He had this this retirement dinner that his entire department put on. It was like a super fancy dinner too. And me and my mom, like during the speeches, me and my mom looked at each other like, he's not retiring. And sure enough, like 6 months after that dinner, he took a job in the Philippines. So like running a hospital. I was like, bro. So for me, I just kept going and going and going. But like I noticed little things. Like for me, I just noticed that like things were fading into the background, right? Like my son had his own stuff going on. I was present, but like not present enough. And like, you know, my cats were there, like my parents were there, but like I was, the fact that I was almost never home, the fact that I couldn't remember when the last time I actually cooked a meal for myself, let alone other people.
Oh, that's heavy.
Yeah. And also just, I like to sort of segue into mental health a little, like, you know, I always thought I was good at like things like multitasking. I always thought like being productive made me like, it just, I was just so used to it because it was who I was. But one of the things I realized was when I wasn't as productive, I would be alone with my thoughts, and that shit was terrifying. So it's just like, am I really a hard worker, or am I working this hard?
I was about to ask, were the thoughts bad thoughts that like I'm not?
Yeah, imposter syndrome, a lot of it too. So much. Just like anybody else. I'm just like for example, like with a lot of the like a lot of Filipino comics. There's not a ton of Filipino comics like in the Bay or just anywhere really. And then a lot of opportunities I've had in the last few years were because there's almost no Filipino female comics. So I was on this top 10 list of like, not top 10, but they're just like Filipino and Canadian comics you should know. And it's normally the same like 5 people and maybe this girl, Happy Slip, who's a YouTube, she's a YouTube creator. I think she's done comedy clubs, but like not in the same way that a lot of us do comedy clubs, right? She's primarily a creator first, and then she does comedy because of the name recognition. And she's also really funny. But like when I say like, comedian, I'm thinking about like somebody that actually went to open mics and did all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so each of the times that have come up, like Filipino American stuff, the name that always pops up for when they think of Filipino women is me. And there's some times where I'm just like, am I really, there's no way I'm the best we could do. Like there's really, like I'm just looking around like there's, you know, there's people that have been like on Joe Coy specials, there's people that have been at JFL, and then there's me who lives at home and shares a phone plan with my dad. Like I still have a lot of that imposter syndrome, even though like I'm aware of my own capabilities and my own accomplishments, and I don't take that for granted. But there are some times where I'm just like, what am I doing here? Like I feel like that every so often. And so like it just got to the point where it was so invasive that I actually started having like manic episodes. Like I just I wouldn't sleep, I wouldn't eat, I was just spiraling. And so like earlier this year I had to do a I had to do an IOP, which is like an intensive outpatient program. But the thing was I couldn't take time off of work. I was too embarrassed to admit that I could have easily done that too and gone on disability, but I was just like I can't do that. And I was also contractually obligated to do on somebody else's tour, and so I had to find a mental health program that I could do like primarily over Zoom. So I did that. So I would do like 2 weeks of that and then be on tour and then do that on Zoom, and then I'd show up to like the clinic and be on tour and then go back and do like three like consecutive days of treatment and things like that, like
and working a job
and taking care of my kid and being a mom and having to be funny and functional. And so doing that program, that mental health program, and also changing therapists, I changed therapists a few weeks ago, like that really kind of like forced my hand as far as like taking breaks. And I feel like the universe has been telling me in like little ways that like I'm not resting enough, because so back in July I ended up in the hospital, and this is the incident I was talking about where I basically was off my meds for 2 weeks, had a manic episode. The next day, a combination of medication landed me in the hospital. And then because I was running out of my original medication and I just needed to be able to be able to sleep. And I also didn't know enough about like other types of medication to know that they weren't going to work on anxiety, like muscle relaxers. Did you know that muscle relaxers don't work on anxiety?
No.
Yeah, I found I found that out the hard way. And so I was in the hospital, and after I was discharged from the hospital, I went straight to work. I was just like, that's the one thing that made me feel normal. And then over Labor Day weekend, my cat died, and I did not take time off of work because I had a corporate presentation that leadership at my day job was looking at. And so I had to like compartmentalize. I cried about my cat for 2 days, and then I had to jump straight into presenting work at my corporate job. And then I did shows that weekend because I had to do those shows. And then the next day after I got back from Santa Cruz, I tested positive for COVID. And it was like the universe telling me, okay, now you really got to sit here and be alone with your thoughts.
That's kind of you know, for comics, testing positive for COVID has almost turned into a good thing.
Yeah.
Like you have to now.
Yeah. You have to
chill the fuck out.
You have to sit your ass down. You have to put down the laptop. You have to put down the phone. Like, just take care of yourself for a fucking change. Because yeah. There were like little things like for the last like couple of years that just led me to be like, you know what? Like, You got to slow down. I was getting more panic attacks. I wasn't sleeping as much. My eating patterns were so fucked up. Like, it was a wild time. Like, this year has been like particularly trying. And so, but at the same time, even though like I've had a lot of like personal challenges and professional challenges as well, I think the thing that balances it out is that I allowed my family to show up for me. You know what I mean? Like I've always been close to my family, but like there were some things, like vulnerable things, that I'd never really talked to them about before. And I was talking, but you know, after they saw me in the most incredibly vulnerable states, when they saw me in my family got to see me, or not got to see me, like that's like a privilege or something, had to see me in varying stages of like recovery and vulnerability, which was not something that I've always shown them. I think it took that to realize like maybe this is what she needs. And so I feel like this is the year that I've gotten to know, I've allowed myself and you know my family to just surround me and do what families do.
Yes.
You know, because I've always had a good relationship with my family, but like there were some things about my life that I always kind of kept close to the vest, because not that I thought they didn't care, but culturally like those were just things that weren't really talked about. So they were things that I assumed they weren't going to understand, like going to therapy, like going to like mental health programs, like talking to somebody other than your family member about what's going on with your life. Like they got to see that part and that part of my life. I let them in, and I feel like we've all gotten closer and more tight knit. And I just, you know, it's sort of cliche to me when people are like, oh, family over everything, because I'm a huge believer in boundaries. And sometimes when people say that, they take it out of context. And like, but with my immediate family, like, this is probably the closest I've gotten to them. So that's probably the best. I think that was the best thing that's happened to me, honestly. Like, professionally, like, do I feel like I could be further ahead? Like, if I had kept going at the rate that I was going, probably, but I probably also would have been running myself into the ground. And it's just like, I'm at the age where I just like, I'm over it. Like, I don't want to do team no sleep. I don't want to be like, that's the grind. I just want to work hard, be nice, make jokes, like, afford things, and, you know, live another day. Like, it's one day at a time now. Like, it's one day at a time. Like, I think the only situation in which I'd want to work that hard again would be if it was like a guaranteed, and there's never any guarantees. Like, even if you work hard, like, you're not guaranteed anything. That's why I'm just like, you know, maybe this is the year that I have to slow down. And I think it taught me a lot about being comfortable with not being comfortable.
That's when you hit the wall, was it something that your parents had like warned you about before? Like, don't, you're doing too much. Or no. Were they... because it's not in the culture.
Like, they were confused as to why, like, I was just on the couch all the time, like, just not going to shows, not changing out of my hoodie, like, I should be talking to you here, sorry. So like, so they didn't notice, because working a lot of jobs all at the same time and working balls to the wall, that's normal to them, because it was normal to everybody else in my family, because we're all like workaholics pretty much.
But I think so that like, it's normal to like our parents to work that hard, but you're adding the aspect of like, I'm also a creative, like, I'm a creator, like, mm-hmm. I need to be out and about. So like, I can work hard. I'm not afraid of working hard, but I need to add an additional layer to it. And you guys don't understand that.
Right. Like,
because you guys work hard. Like, that's it. I mean, you work. Not that that's it. Right. But being creative is hard, and it's taxing. And it's like you said, you get that imposter syndrome of like, am I even funny, or are people just being nice to me?
Right. Like, for the longest time, I'm just like, am I getting booked because I'm actually funny, or do I just fulfill? Am I somebody's diversity hire?
I was about to ask you about that.
Straight up.
So I get the imposter syndrome of like, people just book me because I'm a nice guy, and like, I'm an older nice guy, and they'll book me. Did you get the imposter syndrome of like, they're booking me because I'm a girl, they're booking me because I'm Filipino, they're booking... Did you get that imposter syndrome?
A lot. So it's just like, am I like some, like 90% of the lineups I see, I'll just look at it and be like, I'm the woman. Okay, great. And so like, and there's people like, I've actually heard female comics say shit like, I like it when I'm the only woman on the line. I do not. Because to me, I'm just like... there could be more, like, there could be other women working as well too. And so, what was your original question?
My bad. I don't even remember. Did that give you imposter syndrome?
Yeah. Because I would just, I'd look at everybody on the lineup. I'd be like, why am I here? Am I here because they need a woman? Am I here because a better comic wasn't available? I had all these questions. And then after a while, I just stopped caring. I was like, you know what? The only thing that matters is that I'm here. So I'm going to do this work because that's the job that they're paying me to do. And I'm going to leave. But like, you know, like for a while, like I used to really think like I'm somebody's, like I fulfill a lot of diversity criteria. Like I get it. But also I think when you get a chance like that, you could either do one of two things. You could either think about like, why are they hiring me? Why are they booking me? Or you could just kind of put that out of your mind and go do your job. And so like, I'm just going to stop thinking about it. Because I think what that does is that it limits, you're basically limiting yourself by thinking that. Like, you're like, why am I here? Like, you're just sort of distressing them when, you know, what I should have been thinking is, I'm thankful that I'm here. You know, as opposed to like, why'd you guys book me? Like, honestly, it doesn't matter. Take the job. They asked you, take the job.
Yeah, I have to think more like, I'm thankful I'm here, because I still get like, oh, what, you know, it's so much goes through your brain.
It's a lot. And you know what? Like, for me, I personally, whenever I see a lineup and I'm the shittiest comic on the lineup, that's a good day for me, because I'm like, I get to learn something. I get to watch people that I really respect and stuff. Like, I really, really genuinely enjoy it when I am when I'm the one person on the lineup that still has a day job. I'm just like, this is going
to
be fun.
I still get excited to see lineups and see the lineups I'm on. And I'm just like, it never gets old. I'm super excited about comedy right now. I've had my moments of like, I'm not excited about it.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited about everything in life right now, and
good,
and it's just great to slow down with you and have this conversation finally that we wanted to have
for years.
Ivy, wrap up every show with 5 easy questions.
Okay,
did I send them to you?
You did.
I did. All right, good. What did I send them to you on?
Instagram okay. Messenger.
Thank
yeah,
you
yeah.
thank
yeah,
you because now I could find them easily. And I do this just so we could have some kind of uniformity and we could find somewhere to cut it out, or else I'd talk to you all night.
Of course.
And you've got a show to get to.
Shit, what time is it?
you're right on time. Look, I'm taking care of you, man.
You're the best.
I'm taking care of you.
And Dutch Brothers? Shit.
Oh, yeah. I had Dutch Brothers today. That was my treat because I worked hard.
You should. Treat yourself.
How was your coffee?
My coffee's amazing. Thank you.
All right.
I love a good cup of coffee.
I love making a good cup of coffee. Beepy, are you ready for 5 easy questions? She loves you, man.
She's chilling.
All right, question number 1. Ivy Cordova.
Yes.
Who or what inspires you?
To do what? Oh, just like in life?
Yeah, in life, yeah.
God, probably my dad. Probably my dad.
You've talked about your dad a lot.
I talk about my dad a lot because, like, I never wanted to go into tech. I thought I was going to be a writer, and my dad's like, you want to live in the Bay Area? Yeah. Well, you better do something that makes you money. So, like...
be an artist.
Yeah. No, it just... And I worked for the San Francisco Chronicle, and they fired me while I was pregnant with Jacob. So, like, after they fired me, I was like, well, okay, I need to go find a job. And so, fortunately, I had an office job and a temp agency that was like putting me with like tech companies. And I told them, I was like, do you guys have something that's like temp to hire? Because I need obviously insurance, whatnot. And I had no idea how to conduct myself in an environment like that. So I just watched my dad, who was usually the only like brown guy in like in a boardroom full of like, there's like white people, random Japanese guy that doesn't smile, Indian dude. And then my father. Right. So like, it was always WWDD, what would dad do? And so I would model my professional persona after my father. And so like that ended up becoming how I have managed to sustain an almost 20-year tech career without getting arrested on the job. Hey, so that was kind of cool. But then also like, he's inspiring in other ways because so much of his life revolves around like responsibility and duty and devotion to other people, you know, like he like always drives used cars and just doesn't really, he's not super materialistic because he's just like, well, that money could be spent like, you know, helping one of your cousins go to school or like pay a bill and stuff like that. And so like, I feel like I want to get to that level because, you know, when I get paid, sometimes I'm just like, okay, well, I got to give half of this to Jacob and like, let me go get a purse. But I'm just, you know, he thinks about other people first and stuff like that. Like, his whole life has been around like duty. And so, and he's also just one of the funniest motherfuckers I've ever met.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it's so weird that like, I'm not even the funny one in the family. We talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even the funny one in the family, but I do this professionally. Right. And like, my dad, I'm just like, you should be a comic. And he was just like, I would get arrested. So
right on, man.
But yeah, that's what inspires me.
Shout out to your dad.
Thank you.
Question number 2. What are you currently binging? It could be a series of books. It could be a TV show. It could be whatever. Like, what are you like just soaking it all up right now? You can't get enough of this.
This is so fucking embarrassing. 90 Day Fiancé, The Other Way.
Wow.
Yeah.
But 90 Day Fiancé is big on a lot of, is way up there on a lot of people's lists.
Right. And it's huge. And the reason I'm binging it is because like I'm just like, I can kind of see why these people have to resort to other places to meet people.
These people are so toxic.
They're so disgusting. And some of them are just like, you know, rather than focusing on like, sending money to some person you've never met, like, why don't you put that same money towards like go to a therapist, like go do CrossFit, like work on yourself. And I think it's a real interesting look about people and their dynamics and them trying in vain to make something work that is really just sort of untenable. And I feel like to some degree, maybe it's exploitative because we're watching these people like melt and like have meltdowns and fall apart. But then there's also people that have genuine relationships, you know? So it's just like, there's 7 billion people in the world and so many ways to meet a person. And just the fact that this show highlights some of the best and also the worst of it, I'm just like, I don't mind being single. Like, it's fine. It's fine.
I love it. Ivy, what are you afraid of?
What am I afraid of? I am afraid of being in a situation where I literally have no choices. Like, I'm afraid of traumatic brain injuries. I'm afraid of like something being put in a position where my intellect or my personality can't get me out of. Like, I think what scares me is being up against the wall and having to sort of like admit defeat that way, you know, especially if it was something that I worked hard for. Like, that's real humbling. And that's sort of what I'm afraid of.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. This one's kind of fun. You're on death row. What's your last meal?
Hell yeah. Okay. My death row meal. I've thought about this multiple times because I actually have used this question as a, as an icebreaker in corporate situations. They're like, yep. Ivy, death row. Really? I was like, you'd be surprised. Everybody will answer this question. And it's true. So, my last meal would be the, tomahawk steak from Beatrice Inn in New York City, which is the site of the most expensive, but also the most delicious, one of the most expensive meals I ever had. I mean, I couldn't tell you how much it cost. I'm pretty sure it was more than my rent. But it was one of my first real like corporate splurges, and I never forgot that fucking steak. And if money wasn't an object, I would have that. I would have like tacos from El Griense. I would have so that would be tripa tacos from El Griense. I would have carnitas tacos from Taco Sinaloa in Oakland. Like, I would have a food truck like all lined up next to San Quentin. Like, it would just be like food truck central. And people are like, oh my god, it's a food festival. It's like, no, I'm on death row and this is my last meal.
Would there be any kind of sweets?
I will. Oh my god, for sweets, it would probably be like my mom's flan. Mm. My mom's flan.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So that would be my entire death row meal.
Love it. And lastly, Ivy Cordova.
Yes.
What's next?
What's next? I've got this show at in 25 minutes at Sac Punchline, and next week, actually not next week. I think the major thing that's coming up for me is the Oakland Comedy Festival. So nice. I'm doing that on October 14th, and then the following week I'm flying to New York, and I'm doing the first Filipino comedy festivals there. And then in November, I've got this Haha Harvest Comedy Festival in Portland. So this is the year where I finally just started like applying to festivals.
You're busy, but it's kind of spread out.
It is.
And it's some good stuff.
It is. Because I want to make some time in there to like travel and stuff like that. I still owe my son a trip to Asia. We were supposed to be in Japan, Thailand, and the Philippines for like a month in April 2020, and you know what happened.
Well, so that's right when it happened.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, okay, that's got to be like, we got to do that at some point. But I'm like, he's going to be graduating high school in 2 years, so maybe I'll just wait till then, and then we'll be gone for 2 months.
Ivy, where can they find you on the socials?
You can find me at Ivy Cordova on AivyCordova at I think Instagram, and like, I don't give a fuck. I'm not calling it X. Twitter.
Yeah.
Ivy Cordova. That. Yep. And then, Facebook, really just for family and shit. But, like, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. Like, I spend a lot of time there. Usually when I'm pooping.
Ivy, did we cover everything you wanted to talk about? Is there anything we did not cover?
There was a lot of shit we didn't cover, but that just means that I have to come back.
You got to come back.
I just got to come back.
We could do this quarterly.
Let's go.
Or I'm gonna chase you down every time you perform in Sacramento.
Hell yeah.
With that. Ivy, I'm so glad this finally happened.
Me too.
Let's go watch your show.
That sounds amazing. Let's go. Let's go.
All right. Bye.